what's it called? Albatron?
Arbitron.
Arbitron. And this will list radio ratings.
Basically, yeah, the Nielsen's of the radio.
I don't think they're going to cover local pirate radio stations. But we recently got a list on and this is pathetic, but we recently got a listing on the redlineradio.org. And my hope is to finally get the episodes digitized MP3 format so they can stream and then just spread posters and get word of mouth that way.
Totally. That's exactly how you get word of mouth.
We still haven't flyered just the neighborhood, but hopefully I'll get around to that this week. And places like the Heartland Cafe will be really, and hopefully the Huss. Did you spread the word at the fundraiser over the week?
No.
What are you laying down the job here, guy?
I was busy drinking and hosting.
Yeah, okay.
Cut him some slack. He does a good job.
Yeah. So all right, here with Mitchell
Stipajczyk
talking about media and this group he represents called Media Action.
Chicago Media Action. Yep.
You can reach them at chicagomediaaction.org. Mm-hmm. And you've been interested in this topic for a pretty long time, it seems. You've been active in the scene for a while.
I've been active for a number of years. Actually,
like how many? Like 10 years?
No. Well, there's a long story there. As far as actually doing stuff, that's dates to about 2, maybe 3 years. As far as having an interest in the awareness of these issues. That actually goes back to about a decade, and actually an interesting story. It turns out that my very first exposure to political activism was on a TV show I happened to see on Public Access Channel in Michigan. It was a TV show called Days of Our Lies. and it turns out that I happened to see the first episode of the show.
Yeah.
And the first episode and the first report of this news magazine, it's a weekly news magazine, the first report on the first episode happened to be about the media and how... the structure of the media and advertising content, advertising influence can affect content that's shown.
Yeah. And so, what did you learn here, and how did it get you interested in
it opened my eyes. I mean, dramatically. Yeah. I happened to see it just right after I graduated from high school, and I learned up more about it, and I felt that was my comfort zone as far as politics goes.
Really?
And I'd been reading up about it and learning more about it. I didn't really get active in it until just a couple of years ago when I, around 2000, I just said I have to get involved in this.
So, I don't know if this is going back a few, this is probably like a bunch of years ago. You don't look like you just graduated from high school yesterday.
Yeah.
But what were the big issues it was addressing? Like, how did it open your eyes?
Issues?
Yeah, this Days of Your Lies.
Days of Our Lies. The one particular story just talked about, it really put everything into focus. It just dramatically described the situation that there were, at the time, about 25 corporations that basically controlled the lion's share of the media.
Yeah. Well, and that's a lot. We'd like to get back to that.
Yeah, I mean, that would be an improvement. Thing is that it's gone from about 50, about 25 years ago, to about 6. The best resource is a book which is actually going to be republished in its 7th edition just to keep up with the changing scenario. Uh-huh. Ben Bagdikian, The Media Monopoly. It's a book which is going to be republished in a brand new edition in May. And he had to actually dramatically revise it in light of everything that's happened. And he's probably going to have to probably write another edition.
He probably had to rewrite an edition for the FCC ruling.
That's very likely there.
That wasn't a bill passed, was it?
Are you talking about the FCC now?
Yeah, I'm talking about the FCC.
Okay, the FCC is... Well, first, the background. It's the Federal Communications Commission. Yeah. It's the body that handles regulation and governance of television, radio, satellite, and cable. Yeah. That's its jurisdiction.
Are they actually the government?
They're a government-appointed body. They answer to Congress.
They answer to Congress.
Right. And specifically to the respective Senate Commerce Committee and the House Energy and Commerce Committees.
Are they taxpayer-funded? The
FCC, yes.
Yeah. Because a lot of people don't realize the MPAA is not a government organization. The Motion Picture Association of America, a lot of people assume it's the same thing.
No,
it isn't. The FCC, it's not at all. Mm-hmm. It's a private organization.
Yeah.
That about the FCC, even though they say federal in their name, so is the Federal Reserve.
Right.
It's not federal at all.
Right, right. So, Federal Communications Commission is the firm that dates to about 1934, uh-huh. when it replaced the Federal Radio Commission uh-huh. as far as serving as the arbiter of disputes and the basically the referee pertaining yeah. to issues pertaining to the media.
Is their function basically the same today, or has it...
Their function today, well, it's changed dramatically because the media landscape itself has changed dramatically since the 1930s.
Uh-huh.
But in a lot of ways, they haven't changed. One dramatic one is that they're described a classic example of what's called a captured agency. That is, they basically represent the major corporate interests. They basically run the show as far as, well, in this case, media goes. It's basically, okay. I mean, now it's become about a half dozen major corporations.
They're captured interests?
They're captured interests. Captured by, they're supposed to basically boss around, if need be, people who would break the law or violate the law or disputes might arise. But quite the contrary, they're actually servants to these major interests.
Yeah, and seems like that happens a lot. The SEC.
The Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yeah,
yeah, they're the same thing there. I mean, they've actually shown a little bit of teeth, especially in the wake of the major corporate scandals.
Because of so much outrage.
Right, and it's like when like Enron collapses and you lose $67 billion of market revenue. Yeah, people will be angry, understandably so.
So what's the apparatus through which they become captured? Like, is their board made up of media or media insiders?
The FCC has, very early on, was basically lobbied through a lot of corporate lobbying. Again, the main culprit in this is the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, the main lobby of the corporate broadcasters.
Yeah.
And there also had been a little tacit understanding of that. Business, running the media, running it like any other business, is the best way to run it. And that's not the case because the media is not like any other business. I mean, it's not like selling peanuts or selling potatoes. You can regulate that because, well, media is basically the means by which information and interchange and ideas are propagated. That's a lot different than just buying a car. I mean, that's some tangible thing you can use, but also you can get new things. But as far as idea and information, that's the lifeblood of a democracy and of being able to participate in some reasonable way in controlling your own life.
Yeah.
And if some vested interest, like a corporation, like Rupert Murdoch or Mel Karmazin or Ted Turner or any of these guys, have disproportionate say over what goes on the air and how that affects people, that's not the same thing.
I think that's been an important move lately, is equating democracy with a free, independent, and diverse media.
Right.
And we need to hammer that more and more, just so people understand that this is, this is the most serious issue we're dealing with.
It's very serious. In fact, it's not a tangential issue. It strikes at the very heart of what it means to live in a democracy.
Yeah.
Whether or not you have the knowledge or the information or can receive it in a ready manner. I mean, I'm a maniac, and I'll just hunt this information down myself. Yeah. A lot of people don't have the time or energy or resources to do that.
Sure, you can only follow it so close, getting paid. Like,
right.
Even you.
I work on this all the time, and I try to follow up on it, but you're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm rare in that I have the time and the resources and the commitment to do this, but lots of people don't.
So is Europe better in this than us? Are they keeping their media better regulated? Do you know anything about it?
In terms of Europe goes, I think they've had the more democratic traditions as far as setting up a public broadcasting system. We mentioned BBC and then also comparable other kinds of public broadcasters. However, that's changing for the worse, I think. Firms and systems are and have been making their way and increasing it that way. I mean, like, take Italy, for example. I mean, who's the president? It turns out to be the biggest media mogul in the country, Silvio Berlusconi, who is president.
The
richest country, pretty much. He's the richest man in the country, president of the country, and basically owns the lion's share of the media in Italy.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that before, but that's pretty terrifying. And he brought his people kicking and screaming into the Iraq war.
There were huge protests just this past weekend in Rome. You saw upwards of a million or more protesters.
But over there in Europe, a lot, it seems like a huge chunk of the media is government, not even regularly controlled.
It's not just a matter of so much of control, but basically, I mean, you can have government control and still have a bad media. I mean, we saw that in the Soviet Union, state media problem.
I think we saw that over the week or last weekend in Spain, when the government controlled media toted the line that the ETA, the Basque separatist groups, mm-hmm. were responsible for the bombing.
Right.
When in fact the evidence suggested otherwise, and right. every single non-government controlled media outlet reported the otherwise.
It's not so much a matter of government control as it is, I mean, some issue of autonomy there. I mean, you can have some funding from the government, but that doesn't mean that, I mean, you have to keep it away so that there's some degree of autonomy so they can report back on centers of power to make sure that they don't abuse that power.
It seems to me like more corporate funding in more corporate control, because corporate funding equals corporate control to a certain extent.
Right.
And I mean not unjustifiably. People don't want to sponsor things that they don't like. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a legitimate argument.
One of the radical left wing magazines that you'll read about, Fortune magazine, actually put this
up. Radical left wing.
They actually made a point that a lot of radicals should espouse, and I think I would agree with that. Coca-Cola had done some advertising in, I believe it was, Fortune magazine, and Fortune had apparently wrote something that was not, I wouldn't call it harshly critical, but it really did not shine a bright light on Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola in the response pulled its funding. And when they did so, they made an announcement that the point of advertising is to express one's views in a friendly environment. If you remember nothing else about what I've been talking about this evening, remember those words, friendly environment. When you're seeing content with the advertiser for whatever, cars or Coca-Cola, right, okay. This is Coca-Cola, or cars or foods or soft drinks or body lotion or cigarettes or you name it, you're seeing a friendly environment for those advertisers. If they didn't get those that friendly environment, they wouldn't advertise.
Friendly environment, I like that. Does Fortune magazine still take advertisements?
I believe they do, unfortunately.
it seems to me that if they have their feet on the ground about it, because whenever you're talking about funding, you're talking about control. So it seems to me control is really unavoidable. It's just you have to have your feet on the ground about it. You have to know what the bottom line is.
Right. You have to know awareness and issues pertaining to it, and the media are a key role to that.
So it seems like Fortune magazine, it seems like they have a good attitude about it.
Well, it was, in the case of Coca-Cola, I mean, they had put the ultimatum there, and it just what so happened that they, in fact,
they being Coca-Cola put the
Coca-Cola basically pulled the ultimatum. It's like, okay, when you don't want our money, fine, we'll go someplace else. Yeah. We're loaded. We can find a market. Yeah. And so they probably did. It may well be the case that perhaps Fortune may have mended ways.
Uh-huh.
Coca-Cola could well be back. This was a number of years ago when this happened. Going back to the FCC, if we could.
Yeah.
The FCC has gotten a lot of attention within the last couple of years. It basically served as, by and large, a referee between large media, one of the former FCC chairs, might have been William Kennard, I'm not sure. One of the chairs of the FCC had basically said that the FCC's job was to serve as a referee between the rich and the very rich.
Yeah.
And and that was basically their job. I mean, as far as like any semblance to the public interest.
So in that model, who's the rich and who's the very rich?
By and large now, you could count a top tier of like eight major media firms. You can just rattle them off. News Corp, that's Rupert Murdoch, Fox, Viacom, Mal Karmazan, they own CBS, as well as a bunch of other MTV, Simon & Schuster, Paramount Studios, UPN, VH1, Blockbuster. We can go through the list.
Yeah.
General Electric, which owns NBC, a major player in CNBC and MSNBC. You've also got AOL Time Warner. They own CNN and the WB and Warner Brothers Studios and Warner Music.
Uh-huh.
You've got, I can remember all the lists, Viacom, CBS, Disney.
Disney,
which owns ABC and ESPN.
Yeah.
And
they're getting ready to buy something big, aren't they?
Actually, they were the victim of a buyout from Comcast, the country's largest cable provider.
Right.
And Comcast and actually submitted a hostile bid to Disney, which Disney's board turned down, it turns out.
Uh-huh.
But that sent a lot of shivers through a lot of people. When I read that in the Financial Times, and I actually read the Financial Times because it's smart to read the business press. They tell the people, they tell their community, the business, they tell people the truth.
Uh-huh.
The thing, though, is they're addressing business leaders who
right.
need to know the truth in order to make decisions. So
huh.
I would actually recommend following, like, I don't know, Business Week, or I read the Financial Times. You
yeah.
can read it online.
The Economist?
The Economist is another good
yeah.
one. Remember that
these are all right-wing organizations.
That's very true. They have their own values, which basically are towards making money, maximizing
yeah.
profit, and all of that. They do, however, have good reporting, and they tell
yeah.
the truth on
yeah.
issues.
Which I guess
is why you've got to, I read them like for that
yeah.
reason. You got to have a critical eye about them
sure,
because
sure.
of their values.
I guess that one of the reasons they tell the truth is because they figure they have nothing to hide. They are for deregulation.
Yeah,
and
no.
They consider a virtue
precisely.
Of
precisely. And by and large, a lot of people don't even know about these other news outlets existing. I mean, if
uh-huh.
you're going to, most people will want to read, find out the news, they'll go to whatever, the New York Times or the Tribune or CBS, but business leaders have their own media
yeah.
set up. I mean, here and locally, Crane Chicago Business, probably in the various business pages on the various other media. The FCC had been tending toward the trend toward increased concentration, but basically the idea being more firms owning more and more properties across different media. So
mm-hmm.
that you have, like in the case of Time Warner, they own, a movie studio. It's in fact two: Warner Brothers and and New Line Cinema, which released The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
They own TV networks, cable networks in this case: CNN, all the Turner stations, TBS, TNT, Court TV. They own television, radio. I'm trying to think, music interests particularly.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can actually find these across. And the trend had been, the reason that this had been the case is because about 30 years ago, you had the case where you would have different companies owning properties in different media. Like you'd have like about 2 through 10 firms dominating in, say, radio, and 2 through 10 different firms in television, and another
yeah.
group in movies, and another group in newspapers, and so on. But what these media firms had discovered is that if you were to cut across these media lines,
mm-hmm.
all you have to do is make some kind of content once and then distribute it across your movie studios, your TV networks, your radio stations, your newspapers.
Yeah.
That's a lot cheaper. You can just make it, put the
yeah.
money to make it once, distribute it along your way, and then just rake in the money thereafter.
So
the trend has been along these lines of increasing concentration.
And there was a dramatic increase of that earlier this year, was it?
It was. There was a very
the
real
big ruling.
Right. The FCC had been pushing. I mean, remember, the FCC.
This is the biggest ruling they've ever done, right? This is like the big, like.
A lot
grand
of people consider this to be basically the FCC trying to. And it wasn't just the entire FCC. And basically, the commission consists of five people.
Uh-huh.
Currently, there are three Republicans and two Democrats.
Sure.
The balance there depends on what party is in power in the White House.
Sure.
So
and also the chairman of it, Michael Powell.
Michael Powell, who's this not only Republican, his father is Secretary of State.
Sure.
His father
sure.
is Colin
Powell.
Powell. Right. So the FCC had basically been letting this process come along because
yeah.
they've been a captured agency. And in fact, the trajectory of former FCC commissioners is to take high-paying lobbying jobs or executive jobs within the commercial. Classic example of this,
mm-hmm.
FCC, back I think in the 1940s, 1945, the chair of the FCC, whose name escapes me for the moment, left the FCC after passing through a pro-NBC development, actually then immediately became a member of the board of NBC.
Uh-huh.
So he went right from regulating the firm
yeah.
To being a part of the firm,
uh-huh.
Being on this. And the FCC had basically been going along with this. And since the media will never talk about, I mean, like, what media firm will ever talk about the policies that dictate
right.
their interests? They don't.
Right.
Because they've got a vested interest
you never
in the
point to behind the curtain.
Right. You don't want to.
It's bad showmanship.
not only that, but it's like if people, I mean, they also understand that when people hear about these things, they get outraged and angry and want to do something about it.
Yeah.
Quite understand.
In fact, people did get angry about this.
That's also something else, but that's a little bit later on in the story. The FCC.
I was interviewing, but I guess. That's later.
That's fine.
Okay, no. Go on.
The FCC had been continuing on in this trajectory of just, you know, giving media these major firms basically behind closed doors under no public scrutiny, because the public will never learn about this. And they thought that the coup de grace actually was in about 1996 with the passing of the Telecommunications Act. Mm-hmm. That basically was the first major change in policy law since the Communications Act in 1934.
And what was the gist of that one?
The gist of that was basically, no matter what communications technologies come along, you want to have the market call the shots and have corporations basically run the show.
Okay.
And basically generally put that issue. And in fact, in specifics, it basically led to the rise of Clear Channel as a major broadcaster.
This was 96.
1996. It turns out that if you look in the Telecommunications Act, you can find that it basically removed the limit of the number of radio stations a company could own.
Okay. And what's the reasoning behind this?
Again, the same market dogma, thinking that business, you know,
it's laissez-faire economics.
Laissez-faire economics, the fact that neoliberalism, let the rich rule the world and let everyone else fight for the crumbs.
And we're a country with a profound history of privatization. Well, actually, I guess recently. I mean, not really. You go back to the 30s, I think the trend was the other way, wasn't it?
Some, but there you would have actually faced a serious economic depression,
mm-hmm.
where if it had been the other way around, we probably wouldn't have been a society left to speak of.
But certainly the 19th century was all about laissez-faire economics, privatization.
But increasingly so now, and the watchword there is neoliberalism.
Neoliberalism.
Yeah.
What's that?
It means... It actually dates to Milton Friedman's, he's an economist, or used to be at the University of Chicago. He wrote a book in 1962 called Capitalism and Freedom. And basically, he defined himself as a liberal, derived from the Latin liber, meaning free, but not the kind of political liberalism like you might think of, I don't know, Al Franken, for instance.
Yes.
Here he redefined the word to mean, I want to be free to make as much money as I possibly can.
He was a libertarian.
He defined himself as a liberal, as a new kind of liberal.
There's neoliberal. Word for what he was, though.
Right.
It was
his
libertarian.
So he
the same root.
Right, but he basically just coined this phrase to refer to himself saying, I have a right, his idea was, I have as much right to make as much money as I possibly can, and anything that gets in the way of you interfering with that right, like your taxes or anything like that, is wrong. And he wrote this manifesto in 1962, which has basically been gained tremendous ascendancy in the world. I mean, like everyone else, every other major political leader basically spouts what Milton Friedman had said actually here in Chicago some 40 years ago. And but with tremendous harmful effects, and you can actually look to the third world to this. The media have, as far as media policies and media corporations go, they've taken this with grandeur, and you can see the result. A half dozen corporations flooded with money, but our political governance stifling as a result, and people generally not getting the kind of information they need to run their lives.
Back to the telecommunications.
Yeah.
What the hell?
The telecommunications.
What the hell does that?
Nobody knows. It's the FCC. Anyway, the Telecommunications Act basically rammed this policy through.
Prior to that, what percentage? Do you know what percentage of the market the Clear Channel owned?
Clear Channel had about 40 stations.
40
that
stations.
That was about the legal limit that
about
they could
the legal
own.
Limit. And after?
They currently own about 1,240 stations. And have basically been, they've maxed out their limit in so many markets.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I mean,
but
it's currently eight markets. It depends on the market, but.
Still, Howard Stern can be kicked off the Clear Channel, and yet still have a huge presence in the market. How is that possible?
Because it turns out that Clear Channel is not his primary distributor.
Right.
It turns out to be Infinity Broadcaster, which is owned by Viacom, which is owns CBS.
Right, right.
And that happens to be his broadcaster. But I'm just
counting
the days.
There still must be a decent amount of the market that's not controlled by Clear Channel if Howard Stern can still be on the air and while being kicked
but
out.
But remember that a lot of all these other firms have the same values. It's not like Viacom. Viacom has been currying, I mean, Clear Channel has been...
People's corporations.
I mean, Clear Channel had been currying favor, at least as far as Republicans. Lori Mays, the CEO, is a major Republican funder, friend of George W. Bush. Viacom, which owns Infinity and which aired the Super Bowl, is also is trying to curry favor with the White House and with Republican politicos, precisely because they know that if they curry to them, they'll get media policies back in return, which will allow them to grow and get more money.
Yeah, Stern was only on 6 Clear Channel stations.
That's right.
Out of the 1,240, I mean.
Right. Yeah. So it wasn't a terribly big distributor as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. Now, if it turns out that Viacom feels that Howard Stern is pushing too many political buttons against the Republicans, and that could well happen, then he'll probably find himself without a major distributor.
So you buy the line that that you think he was kicked off for political pressure?
I think that was what was admitted, that there was...
It was admitted?
I thought so. I thought that...
I thought they did it... I take that back.
Yeah. Actually, it's, the obscenity issues.
Right. This is like the FCC's Enron right here, because all of a sudden they have to crack down.
They're forced to crack down, mainly because, and especially in the wake of what's happened in the last year. Let's talk about that now. For the last, this has been the trend from 1996, more or less until about 2 years ago. 2002, FCC makes an announcement with absolutely no fanfare. We're going to review media ownership policies.
Uh-huh.
Basically, there were 6 key media ownership policies pertaining to how many stations, either TV or radio. A firm could own locally or nationally, and also a very key one, which is crucial here in Chicago, the cross-ownership rule, basically allowing a firm to own a newspaper and a TV station in the same market at the same time.
And that was illegal until recently.
With a handful of exceptions, yes. And actually, it currently is still illegal because those FCC rules are under a court-ordered suspension.
Really? I didn't hear about this.
We'll talk about that in a moment, but we'll get to the story. It's like we're building up to his story, glorious ending coming up. 2002, Michael Powell basically makes the announcement that there's not going to be, he'll ram through these dramatic media ownership policies, which would basically open the door for widespread consolidation of media. It would basically mean if one company were to own 3 TV stations, 8 radio stations, the internet service provider, and the monopoly newspaper in an entire city. It basically could open the door to one firm owning that legally in a city and could basically open the door to consolidation that would make what we've seen today seem like a picnic on the beach.
Really? One company owning everything?
Not so much one company, but one or two. But a marked
like
increase
the two political
in this kind
parties.
Of, right.
And they could have the same name. There could be the Republicans.
A marked increase as far as this kind of media concentration. It's a very scary prospect.
Sure.
And so, like, media stations weren't a part of this would be stuck out in the cold.
And then if you try to open your own corporation, it'll be called a spoiler and a maniac.
Right. The FCC tried to ram this through with no fanfare. And they basically had everything going their way. They had a Republican president, Republicans controlling both houses of Congress, Republicans in key positions in courts, and particularly the First District Court in Washington, D.C., which were basically a neoliberal court and had been ruling on FCC issues before. And so it was thought, and nobody knew about this. I mean, damned, those who knew about it didn't have the sufficient numbers to do this. So what happened? A number of things happened. One is... the FCC and a couple people in the FCC, the two Democrats on the commission, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, basically rang the alarm saying what the FCC is trying to pull off is horrible. This has got to stop. We've got to review this. Don't do this, because if you do it, you'll just release the genie and there'll be no way to undo this.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, Copps and Adelstein basically went from city to city across the United States bringing this to a wider issue. They were in Chicago. They went to Northwestern University Law School. They tried to make as much noise as they could. The thing, though, is that, I mean, the media simply wouldn't talk about this, even though at the Midwest Ownership Forum here in Chicago, you had the vice president of the Tribune Company and the head of ABC in Chicago. Their names are Sean Sheehan and Zamira Jones. They were panelists on that forum, and they basically, you know, spotted their line. Deregulation is good. Nothing harmful is going to be about this. The law requires us to review these matters in 2 years.
This is like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something. Like, you've got this important message to tell, and there's just no...
and there's no way to do out of it. However, another of other factors happened. Namely, you had a war that was going on. The 2003 war in Iraq. A lot of, even though you had tremendous organizing and protests that were basically of a scale unparalleled before in human history, they still couldn't get their message out through the media.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people were upset about this. That channeled a lot of rage, and then suddenly a lot of these activists were finding out, whoa, you think the media is bad. Look what the FCC is about to do right now with this media ownership policy. Yep. You're going to think you're living in paradise.
So the activists knew.
The message was coming out. The message had been increasingly coming out. It was spreading mainly through the activist community that also opposed the war. And you had dissident elements within the FCC all trying to establish this kind of development in terms of bringing increased awareness and a critical mass that could act on this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly what happened. Increasing growth in awareness had come to the fore, and not just among activists and liberals. And also a number of conservative groups.
Pat Buchanan's are against this kind of stuff, aren't they?
Pat Buchanan, the National Rifle Association, the Parents Television Council. These are all conservative groups, but they had nonetheless... sided with people opposite the political on the opposite side of the political spectrum on this very issue. Like Trent Lott, of all people, had basically been spearheading Republican efforts in the Senate to bring greater awareness of this.
Really?
On June 2nd, 2003, was basically the D-Day for the media. That was the vote which the FCC, by an unsurprising 3-2 vote along party lines, basically rammed through this vote.
You know why all those people were against it?
Because there were protests in 14 cities that occurred that same day. Chicago had its own protest a week later when Michael Powell happened to be in town.
Uh-huh. those are the people who are always getting smeared by the... Like Pat Buchanan probably doesn't think he gets treated very fairly by the media. The NRA, I know for a fact, doesn't. The NRA thinks that they get railroaded
by
the media.
That's precisely why they had been siding with this, because they felt... I mean, like, it's a little issue, because they're complaining with basically a non-existent argument that the media are too liberal.
Sure.
And so they're thinking, oh, well, the concentration of media will increase and they'll become even more liberal still.
Because the truth is that the media is neither conservative nor liberal. It's a leaner. It leans towards whatever party is in power at the moment. And its interests are its own. They're incompatible with any kind of mass movement because they're not concerned with the people.
They'll be concerned with themselves, but they'll tend toward... politics of the right of the spectrum, mainly because that's where power is and that's where the money lies. That's their ownership too.
Well, I suppose that's their ownership because the rich vote disproportionately.
Right. And then if you've got a mandate to make as much money as you possibly can and keep growing, that'll happen. So you'll side with political interests that will side with that. So there was this increasing upsurge in popularity. Congress was FCC couldn't make any headway in the FCC, but the FCC answers to Congress, and Congress was hearing it. It turned out that from people across the political spectrum in numbers that were unparalleled, it turns out that a survey of 2003 responses of issues that went into Congress, turns out that these media reform issues was the number two issue among all issues that was discussed, topped only by the war in Iraq. So September 4th, 2003 was going to be the date that these rules were going to come in place. And this is where the Philadelphia courts come into play.
Mm-hmm.
A group out of a pirate radio and community radio support group called the Prometheus Radios Project out of Philadelphia joined up with a telecommunications public interest law firm out of D.C. called the Media Access Project, trying to file not only a lawsuit, but a stay against the application of these rules, because they felt that they would have been irreparably harmed by them. They developed a lottery. They basically sent out the same lawsuit in 8 different districts in the hope that they wouldn't get into D.C., which would have been basically a disaster for them. It turns out that the lottery awarded them in their hometown of Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And on the day before the rules came down, September 3rd, just 2 hours before the rules were to go into effect, possibly irreparably, the court unanimously granted a stay against the applications of these rules. Turned out to be an extraordinary victory from left field. And so that's why these rules and this disastrous media change that would have taken place hasn't taken place, because the court put
it. The ruling.
The vote happened, but the law can't change for another 90 days thereafter.
Just because this group from Philadelphia were able to file a couple hours before the deadline?
And it turns out that they had filed beforehand, but they were able to win the stay right before the rules were to go into effect.
Right. It turned out to be,
I refer to it as the immaculate reception of media politics. Just like they threw a Hail Mary pass, and lo and behold, they caught it.
Pirate radio, ladies and gentlemen, now more than ever.
Last month, the FCC, Prometheus and the Media Access Project filed oral arguments in court in Philadelphia in the hopes of overturning these rules in court. We won't know. The decision will probably happen later this year. Nobody knows. They're probably saying spring sometime, May or June. What I'd like to do, and what I'm actually hoping to organize with groups around the country, I'd like to organize either protests or celebrations to occur at the day that the ruling comes down, no matter where it goes. If it turns out that they overturn the FCC's rules, we have massive celebrations in the streets, or in this case, Tribune Plaza. If they overturn them, if they don't overturn them and the FCC rules become law, then we have protests. But they basically organize some public
showing.
Won't it
be too late by then? I mean, don't you have to draw the line before that?
You have to draw the line before that, but also remember that this is but one salvo in a very long, big fight.
Sure.
I mean, we have won in these struggles. And we'll talk also about the low-power FM as pertaining to this. We have just won what is possibly the hardest fight of all. Media issues and media reform is now a thinkable issue in the minds and eyes of a lot of people.
Really?
It hadn't been beforehand. And that will change everything, I promise. How far it will change and how far it will go remains to be seen. I mean, there's a lot of money and interest that's organized behind this to try to continue a certain set of issues and interests to maintain that power. But people are awake to this now, and that is
the media is still sleeping though.
Always slept on this. They're never going to cover these issues unless they're absolutely forced to. I mean, the only headlines I've seen in the Tribune on these two issues pertaining to the Prometheus Radio Project in the business section, a front page article on September 4th on the day the court handed its ruling down, which proved to be like utterly damning to these media firms. They were just expecting Shangri-La in their eyes to just come down the pipe as it always did. And then suddenly, what? There's this group out of Philadelphia with like five people that filed a lawsuit. I mean, literally.
This is an empowering story.
This was extraordinarily powerful. And especially since there was basically nothing behind it, no resources, no attention to it. And it has enjoyed a meteoric rise, and I hope it'll continue. One beneficiary of that, which may well happen within the course of the next calendar year, is low-power FM in stations just like this.
Sure.
Turns out that Michael Powell did not get the kind of support that he wanted from the major public corporate broadcasters, like ABC, NBC, CBS.
But he didn't get the support he expected?
Did not.
Really?
Well, I mean, in his eyes.
In his eyes.
He felt that he got shafted by them. And so he's paying them back. And low-power FM is precisely the vehicle for doing that. February 19th was the date, the FCC, signed off by all the commissioners, including Powell, basically said that the limits for keeping low-power FM under wraps have no technical basis, and as a result, they should be lifted.
So there are right now laws saying low-power FM illegal?
Pretty much.
What's the reason behind this?
Political muscle. I mean, the line that they always say is technical interference. That's going to always interfere with whatever hospital transmissions or airport frequencies or
but
something.
But this isn't
like
the case?
That is not the case. And anyone who knows anything of a shred of the engineering knowledge can tell you. We knew this years ago. In fact, there was an effort to try to bring low-power FM to a much wider audience. They basically got killed both by the National Association of Broadcasters and by NPR, of all people, because they felt that they didn't want stations just like this to right to be serve as competition to what they consider to be their listeners.
Their listeners.
But the problem there...
It's the exact same stuff we hear from the political parties.
Precisely.
Our voters.
Yeah. The issue there was... that was basically political muscle and sneaky, underhanded tactics which basically killed the issue there. And it remained dead 3 years ago, for the last 3 years, uh-huh. until just last month, when it turns out that the FCC, in payback... is going to has already made the recommendation to Congress, a 6-page report basically saying that the FCC, that low power FM should be made legal and increase of licenses should be taking place.
But now wait a minute, how do you know Michael Powell felt shafted? How do you know this?
That's the story that we have from insiders on the FCC.
That fits with your other knowledge.
That so this is something I think we can say in with a fair degree of confidence.
Yeah.
The Congress has taken this LPFM decision with open arms. In fact, the same day that the ruling came down, John McCain, of all people, who happens to be the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, said, I like this ruling, we're going to take it up, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure this becomes law. There's a very real chance that this may become law that would free up a lot more licenses. I would hope that Redline gets one of those licenses.
Yes.
I'm serious.
Let's all hope that.
If you need anything I can do to help with that, let me know. I'm serious about that. I'm in your corner there.
I think something important to keep in mind about the FCC and the Democratic members is they're not only Democrats, but they're activists.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have done an amazing amount of work to propel the whole media reform movement. They both appeared at the media reform conference in Madison, November.
Yeah.
8th through the 11th last year.
Right.
Which was real important to inspire us to know that these are people on the inside, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, that are, you know, getting up on stage and playing harmonica.
That was on one of the they had a the National Conference on Media Reform was a major gathering of activists, citizens, politicos, all on the issue of improving the media.
Sure.
And it was in Madison, Wisconsin, early November. One of the events, they happened to coincide with the launch of a Tell Us the Truth tour, a musical tour that was actually going to bring up increased issues against, you know, corporate globalization, media reform, popular democracy generally. And Jonathan Adelstein went on stage. He's an FCC commissioner. He went on stage in the first performance of this at the Orpheum Theater in Madison. He had a harmonica, and he played, what did he play? I can't remember.
I'm not sure, but he's playing with Billy Bragg.
He was playing with Billy Bragg and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine and Audio Slave.
Great.
And he was playing the harmonica on stage. Very well.
Yeah.
He's like, I complimented him. It's like, there's a photograph on Chicago Indie Media's coverage of the National Conference of Media Forum. I took a photo of him being on stage, and it's like, extraordinary. It's like, you can play.
That's great. So what kind of guy is this guy? Does he like wear like fatigues and put a mask on and go like riot in Seattle?
Well,
not that kind of.
They're both no. I mean, they're both. I mean, remember, Copps and Adelstein are politicos. I mean, they've been part of the machine for a while, and they can only go so far. And there's some evidence to suggest that they too are also. I mean.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, remember Washington, that. Man. Give them credit though; they were raising issues of key importance that would have just sailed right through.
Yeah.
If they hadn't done this work.
Absolutely.
I mean.
So you found incriminating evidence of these guys.
I didn't, but the Center for Public Integrity did. This is a nonprofit journalism outfit out of Washington D.C. You can look them up. Publicintegrity.org. Yeah. They discovered that the FCC commissioners were getting paid high-profile junkets paid for by media firms to go to, like, New Orleans and Las Vegas and Paris by media firms, even though they're supposed to be regulators of this stuff. And there's some evidence to suggest that the Democrats also got some money in the pocket.
Man, you can't touch that town without getting filthy.
Yeah, unfortunately. It was built in a swamp, and it stinks then. It stinks now, as one person said.
Whenever I've been in Washington, D.C., I've gotten physically ill, like four times.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Evil energy going on
evil,
out there.
Evil.
So what's the benefit to the public with low-powered FM?
A number of benefits. For one thing, it allows...
How am I affected?
how are you affected? Well, I'll explain one very tangible way. It allows for very quick dispatch of information out there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if there had been low-power FM in Minot, North Dakota, this is a town in North Dakota which about a year ago, January 2003, there was a chemical train leak nearby in the town.
Yeah.
The emergency broadcast, it was like a serious leak. I mean, they're like... like hundreds of people had to be hospitalized. One person actually died from the leak.
Uh-huh.
Police could not alert the people through emergency broadcast systems. They happened to be down at the time.
Yeah.
So they thought, let's use the radio. Problem was that all the radio stations were owned by Clear Channel in the town, and the one office that Clear Channel had was unstaffed at the time, late at night, that they happened to be broken. Now, Clear Channel would argue and say, well, there's no guarantee that even if all six of those stations had six different owners, that you couldn't have prevented that same leak, which might be true. But remember that the fact that this happened, and in fact, actually, there's been another incident happening in Baltimore where they actually got a hold of someone for another similar kind of dangerous chemical leak. Mm-hmm. But the station did not go on air because it was against policy.
Wait, what policy was it against?
That it was they got this. I mean, no. I mean, they couldn't. It was actually, you're laughing, but that's exactly the case. They
really
the radio station had to basically follow the law for its broadcast schedule day,
yeah.
no matter what came through, and that included like a police emergency to people who were nearby.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing that we've seen and probably will continue to see. Low power FM breaks those barriers. They allow people to take charge of their media, can be responsive. People can come in, no commercials. I mean, we haven't aired a single commercial in like an hour and a half.
Actually, I was just going to talk about these new boxer shorts I got.
Okay, then. So BBD will apparently be making a cameo appearance on this radio station.
Yeah.
But, I mean, no commercialism. You can have a good signal without a lot of effort or